For the month of May 2020. Me and Wes did a show previously where we talked a bit about Final Fantasy VII Remake as well as Trials of Mana Remake.
I did play a bit more of 7.
Yeah, thumbs up.
A couple more hours in. Yeah.
Oh no.
I like it. Okay. It's good.
Okay.
That's good.
Yeah, I've heard it's an overlooked gem. Not a lot of people have played it.
Yeah, it's a very underappreciated. Underknown.
It's like game. Azure Striker Gunvolt is what I hear. It's supposed to be kind of like on par with that, you know?
I like that. That's good.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll probably branch out into a variety of different topics for this show. You know, we'll follow any rabbit trail you guys want to go down. I have some games that we can talk about. If you guys have any games or any topics you feel like bringing up, you can go ahead and we'll tackle anything. Anything you feel like. But I wanted to start with something that we don't talk about often, and that is sales, because Nintendo did have their quarter four for 2020, I guess their end of the fiscal year, numbers for the Switch, and they've sold a lot of Switches.
Quite a few, in fact.
One or two.
Yeah. So, lifetime Switch has now sold 55, almost 56 million units as of March 31st. Which is more than the GameCube and the N64 combined. I believe it has also passed the Super Nintendo now in lifetime sales, I think, and it's getting very close to the NES, and then the only other system that would have to surpass, as far as Nintendo systems are concerned, would be the Wii, which would be very impressive if they could do that. The Wii sold over 100 million, but I guess it just depends on...
But what about the Wii U? What about the Wii U, John?
They just narrowly edged out the Wii U a couple of years ago.
Ah.
Yeah. But the other big thing in these sales numbers were like all the million sellers that they released. And there is one game on that list that is new because it just came out. And it's Animal Crossing New Horizons. Sold 11.77 million units in the span of, oh, that game came out March 24th, I think. So from March 24th to March 31st, it sold almost 12 million units.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, that is a crazy amount of games.
Yeah. 11 million units in 11 days.
Yeah, I mean, hey, it's the perfect game for this kind of environment, honestly. I mean, we are, of course, in a pandemic. You know, I feel like people 10 or 15 years are going to be like, man, they sure talked a lot about that pandemic whenever anyone's going back and looking at what happened in 2020. Really, that pandemic was a thing, wasn't it? At any rate. But yeah, no, it's like, could you imagine a more perfect game for this? It's got to be Animal Crossing, a game where you kind of just get to go around and do things, and it's so low effort, low intensity, such mm-hmm. positive gaming experience, you know? It's not like a...
I went the other route. High effort, high intensity, very negative gaming experience with World of Warcraft.
Perfect example, you know? Yeah. And again, it's very much an introvert's kind of game, too, where, you know, of course you can send mail to people, and you can do stuff to socialize in the game. You can open your island and other people can come to your island. But, you know, for the most part, it's really kind of you. You wouldn't do what you want to do with the game.
Yeah, so. The game is what you make it.
And it's the sort of game that's so long form, you could just kind of play. I feel like in a lot of ways you just play it and play it and play it, and you never really get tired of it because there's always kind of something to do.
Yeah, and
versus
so that,
like
that's,
you know, I'm. Oh, go ahead, John.
That's one of the things I'm looking forward to as the year goes on. It's like you're having all like the seasons changing and all like the different bugs and fish that you're able to get as seasonal stuff and like seasonal like decorations and things you can craft to sort of like pimp out your island.
Yeah, because you know that Easter event was such a smash.
The children really, really like that Easter stuff. Ripley still asks for me to make her the Easter dress and hat, but I don't have the materials to do it anymore, so I have to tell her, yeah, we gotta wait till Easter again.
Wait. Do you need more than one?
Well, Mika, I made some for Mika, but Ripley didn't start playing until after the Easter thing.
So you don't have it for her.
Right, so Mika was able to get one, but then once Easter ended, Ripley hadn't played yet, I just sold off all of the leftover Easter stuff that I had. So, yeah, don't have the materials.
You should let me know. I mean, I've got about 30 of each egg, so if you need anything. Yeah, I stockpiled because I figured I might go back at some point and want to, like, rebuild some stuff.
I think it's 3 or 4 of each. I'll take a look and I'll let you know, and then send Ripley some mail.
Sounds good. Yeah, I mean, I've been stockpiling all kinds of stuff. I finally figured out a really easy way to just get a bunch of those star fragments, so... Well,
you just, like, let the game run overnight.
Well, here's the thing. You kind of have to have... I told you guys I got a turbo controller. So yeah. What I've done the past few nights, and I'm sure it's making my, you know, in-game hours playing it look gratuitous, but what I'll do is I'll just go to this southern point on my island and then just face the water and then look up so that I'm actually staring at it, and then I'll turn my turbo controller on to auto-press A. So then just overnight, I'm just sitting up there just tagging every single star that flies. Because that's the thing, you can't just look at the star and it count. You actually have to hit A when it's going through the sky. So really only works if you have a turbo controller. I've done that for the past like 3 nights in a row, and it's probably added 30 hours of gameplay, but you know.
Well, how many do you have?
About 45. It's there's different categories, so every zodiac season has a different star. So I've got about 7 Tauros ones. I already made the Tauros bathtub, which is fucking sweet as hell. And then there's just the regular star fragments, and then there's like the, I don't know what they call them. There's an even rarer, nicer one, and I've got 2 of those. Those are super duper rare. But I'm not gonna do this many more times. I mean, if anything, I'll probably just do it when it's the next zodiac sign, whenever the next one rolls around, because you need. In theory, I'm gonna have to do this at least 12 times to get all my zodiac pieces. So. No need to stock up on everything right now. And John, I am going to craft you one of those wands. You're going to love those wands, man. They're fucking awesome. Like, I think probably the thing I care the most about the game is probably the fashion. I really love all the clothes and shit that I get to put on and stuff. So having that that wand to just auto-change your clothes is so nice. It beats running to a fucking dresser every time you want to look different.
So when you have the wand to change out your look, does that stuff have to stay in your pocket? Or just kind of like go into some sort of void?
Like, no, it's one more equipable item in your inventory, the same way you'd have a net or a shovel.
Okay, so you don't have to keep all your different pairs of pants. Like, it's not taking up space in your pocket.
We're talking about shut the fuck up. We hear you sighing.
We're talking about sales, and now it's diverged into some kind of long discussion about Animal Crossing again.
Was there anything else about the sales that struck you guys?
Oh, I want to kind of go back to those numbers. Can we just read off the numbers? Is that cool? I mean,
yeah,
not
go
that
for
many
it.
Bullet points. Okay. So I guess that is one interesting thing. I guess now Animal Crossing New Horizons is now the 7th best-selling game, which is pretty fucking nuts.
Yeah.
So it's just barely outlasted Splatoon 2. Although apparently there's like some big Splatoon 2 push going on right now. I think they're trying to get people playing that game again.
Yeah, there's a free trial.
Yeah. So they're trying to really get some momentum back into that. Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee has sold close to 12 million. Sword and Shield sold 17. Mario Odyssey sold 17. Breath of the Wild and Super Mario Odyssey have both sold 17.41 million copies. That's wild. Like within 10,000. Yeah, within 10,000 units of each other. Smash Ultimate is 18, and this is a shocker. I'm really surprised that Mario Kart 8 sold this well. 24 million copies of Mario Kart 8.
Yep.
Do you guys both have that?
I do not.
I don't.
No, because I have
you
it
have
on
it?
On Wii U.
The Wii U.
Yeah, I never moved over to Switch version, and it's not something like I don't.
You're one of the 3 people who bought one,
right? I don't.
Do you think maybe they're? Go ahead. Sorry, what?
I don't double dip on these Wii U ports all that often. I think I got to one for Ripley as a birthday present. The new Super Mario Brothers port from Wii U. And, you know, if I were ever to get Mario Kart on Switch, it would be as a gift for one of the girls if they wanted it. I wouldn't get it for myself at this point because I already bought it.
Hey, Astral Chain broke a million.
Yeah, good sure for did. That, game. That was a really cool
one. I liked that game.
Yeah.
This is an interesting fact. There's 27 different titles that have sold over 1 million copies.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. Again, I guess Astral Chain's one of them.
Fire Emblem's almost yeah. 3 mil.
You were playing that one, though? Yeah.
X-Men.
What is this? Pokemon Sword and Shield has outsold all mainline Pokemon installments by 3DS or of 3DS. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, that's crazy. Because 3DS had a huge install base.
How come Xenoblade's not on this list?
It's not out yet.
No. The Xenoblade 2.
I don't know. I mean, we'd have to look at some reliable sales numbers. That maybe it never broke 1 million, which would be crazy.
Well, it's not going to list all 27 here, is it?
If it broke 1 mil, probably.
No. No, but if it, I was under the impression that they were selling, they were showing like their first party games that broke 1 million. So maybe 27 like third party games have also broken.
Okay, that makes more sense. Yeah, it sold fine.
So they're
that is also some like Japan centric gaming you're talking about there. You know,
well, it's,
maybe those games don't sell so hot in America, but they're like
it's a goodie though.
Oh, actually, John, that's not a tangent. Have you heard of a game called Trails of Cold Steel?
I have.
Have you played any of it?
No, I've never played any of it because it's never come to Nintendo systems until 3. 3's coming out.
Okay, a buddy of mine was repping it. He was saying, like, if you love JRPGs, and I'm like, I don't like RPGs. You know, and then he's like, you should try Trails of Cold Steel, and I'm like, I don't like them. And he's like, but if you liked them, you know, you'd try this, and I insisted, I don't like them.
So just don't like them.
Stop.
Right.
Stop. And he's like, well, there's all these different ones, and, like, you know, they have all this stuff, and there's all of this unique dialogue, and it's all spoken language. So if you like JRPGs, and I'm like, I fucking hate JRPGs, shut the
hell
up.
John, we need to find one for Ryan to play.
So you got a Green Eggs and Ham situation going on.
Exactly. Well, so what he did get me with was two things. One, apparently, it's like the reason why it takes so long to localize them here is because of the dialogue. Mm. It's all spoken dialogue, and there is so fucking much of it. And it's one of those things where you can constantly travel back. So when big storyline events happen, they have to go back, and then you get two new unique lines of dialogue from like every fucking character.
Mm.
So it's just so much fucking dialogue that has to be translated if they're going to dub it into English. And two, big old anime hoots. They are everywhere. The game is just seemingly loaded with those big anime titties that the Japanese market seem to love so much.
Well, they know how to do it right.
Well, that's the yeah. thing about the series is I've been interested in it when they announced it for Switch, because the drawback is all of the dialogue. I don't care. I don't like if the cutscenes are skippable. Great. I'm not interested at all. And all these intricate storylines. The battle system looks good, and it does have those anime hoots. So, this one's firmly
I
in
mean,
the maybe
sold
pile.
Me on anime hoots.
From what he showed me, too, they even make fun of it. Like they're at the same time in the game, sort of making fun of it, but then also meta making fun of the people playing it for being such perverts.
But then not stopping doing it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, you think the Saw movies are going to stop killing people? I mean, this is kind of what they do.
Didn't they though? Didn't they stop making Saw movies?
I mean, they probably stopped making the movies, but I don't think there was a Saw film in which, you know, everybody things kind of went okay for everybody involved.
They stopped making the movies, but they're still doing
right?
it.
Right? Like it'd be like a Fast and the Furious movie.
So, Wes, you brought up before we were recording that Nintendo's projecting to sell like 19 million Switches in the next fiscal year. Which,
yes. If
right.
they can make it.
Right.
If they can make it.
They have ramped up production 10%. And there was a Bloomberg report that was actually doing some research into why Switches were so hard to find. Because, you know, Nintendo is never actually going to come out and say, hey, Switches are hard to find right now because of this. Like, we're having problems making them. Like, that's not the way that Nintendo, or like most reputable businesses, don't operate that way. They don't let you peek behind the curtain sort of thing. They're just like, hey, we're trying to ramp up production. So what ended up happening was there are components that they get for the Switch that come from Malaysia and the Philippines that are shut down due to coronavirus quarantine and social distancing. So they've had problems producing.
Well, I mean, you can't have all those children in a small warehouse all day. I mean, it's just
right. You need to let them. You need to have those children work outside where they can get fresh air.
Yeah, exactly. Distance it out.
Well, the component is their tiers, right? It has to be like authentic children tiers.
Yeah, that's right? What that's what keeps the pretty system sure. cool. Yeah.
Yeah, the cooling agent only works. There was a joke in The Simpsons where it was like, for whatever reason, Bart got shit glued onto him and he couldn't get it off. And then they took him to Hibbert. And Hibbert, like, was like, okay, now we're going to grind him off. And then, like, he brings out this big, like, circular saw grinder and, like, puts it right in Bart's face. And then all of the pieces fall off of him. And then he says, and he's like, haha. And they're like, oh, how did that work? And he was like, oh, it's because I made him sweat. And he's like, and he was like, did you have to like threaten his life to make him sweat? And he's like, it had to be terror sweat. So maybe, maybe that's the same.
Since you brought up Simpsons, this is a random thing, but I was watching it at work in the break room. And I haven't sat through like a Simpsons episode in years. And I forget how funny it is. Because it was the episode where Lisa is, suddenly he becomes a vegetarian and is against eating meat. And they show...
Oh, that is like a top five.
They show that instructional video about eating meat in school.
Oh, yeah, that's
like,
right.
The shark comes
like,
out
off the killing floor, and he's like, don't let the name fool you, kids. It's just a loose grating for meat to slip through.
And then the shark comes out of the river and eats them.
Oh, yeah,
the
that's
ape.
The... Oh, God. It's the, what is it, the food pyramid,
yeah, like
or whatever?
The food chain or something.
If you can pause on it, it's great because it's just a happy person, and then, like, all of this animals just, like, with arrows pointing directly to the human. Like, we could eat everything. One of which is, in fact, a bat. So, lesson learned. Fitting. Oh, and then, like, Ralph is like, I want to graduate from Bovine University. Like, that's, oh. Man, that episode fucking slays. That is a classic.
That was
one.
Really good. I was cracking up in the break room. My coworkers were getting a little annoyed at me. I'm like, deal with it. This is funny.
Oh.
You were like, shut up and go back to playing Animal Crossing.
Also, like, who was showing that though? Because like, that's like again classic. When I feel like whenever there's a random Simpsons episode on, it's like from season fucking 30 something or whatever.
I have no idea. I don't know what channel we were on, but man, that was funny.
Yeah. Oh, again, what a wonderful... Like, you are just making me relive this episode. I love it so much. I've watched this episode probably 30 times in my life.
Independent thought alarm.
Oh, yeah. It's like two independent thought alarms in a day. It's like, get rid of the colored chalk.
I told you not to have that colored chalk.
Yes. Oh my God! Can we just watch the episode
like on
right
air?
Now?
This is record us watching.
We got
22
minutes, don't we? Holy shit, that was. Oh, and like fucking who? Paul McCartney's at the very end of it. Paul McCartney and his wife.
I didn't get to finish it. I had to go back to work. It. It was just that small time in between the independent thought and then the end of the instructional video.
Yeah, it's Troy McClure doing it. Oh, and I love how he's walking across the cows.
Yeah, you know, like, he just steps off the cows in the beginning. All right, video games. Let's
Wait, what? Okay, yeah, we're talking about some video games again.
Oh my God.
Simpsons Hit and Run. That was a good game.
Ryan, how's your island?
Oh my God.
It's going pretty good.
Ryan through RPG crap. Why do you put me through this crap?
Yeah.
It's all right. Go on.
No, I really don't have. Honestly, I haven't been playing all that much. I hate to say it, but work truly has been brutal. I've been working crazy fucking hours lately, so I haven't had a lot of time to do much of
anything.
You're
a male stripper, right?
Yeah, you know, but it's in the quarantine, right? So, you know, I gotta swab all the poles down, you know, before I use them and everything. It's not fun.
Yeah, it's not very strips attractive wearing the face mask on stage.
Yeah. Have to put it over the junk, too, they said. I don't know what that's about. I think they're kind of making a lot less money because of it. No, I mean, I'm a number-crunching accountant. Actually, I heard this, I did listen to Joe Rogan. I'm not a big fan of Joe Rogan's podcast, honestly. I think Joe Rogan himself is kind of a little self-indulgent with his own thoughts. But he did have Elon Musk on his podcast recently for like a two-hour sit-down interview. And Elon Musk said something that really kind of stung me a little bit, where he was like, too many of our nation's best minds go into finance, which is precisely what I did. And I'm like, I'm just slaving away over fucking spreadsheets all day long when it's like he's building
what
rockets
and
shit.
So you to think that you're one of the nation's best minds.
I don't know. I'm certainly one of the ones that's better at math and technical shit. Well, I wouldn't say I'm, you know.
There is a ranking system of all 330 million Americans. Yep. Ryan's in the 10,000s, so.
Hear that? Hear that, Wes? Yeah. Take that, all right. Mr. All right. 5 million.
I'm like the bottom three, so I mean, I'm not really one to talk, so.
Yeah. Nah, I don't know. We're all probably pretty smart.
Or is it the other way around? Probably I'm dumb. That's what I'm trying to say. That's probably... Probably misunderstood.
You're in the 99th percentile.
Yeah. You nailed it. Good job.
This is really shitty. We shouldn't be talking about how smart we think we are. But at any rate, work's been fucking rough lately. Just lots of hours. And so, yeah, I don't get to do all the things I want to do, which is like fucking, you know, churn hours on Animal Crossing. All I've been doing is buying the most expensive stuff and making money the fastest way I can. Mm. So I've got all kinds of cool stuff. But, you know, I haven't really done much of... the really advanced things that I've seen, like terraforming that people do, and like what's the other big thing, like making small, people like to do these small scale ones, they'll take like a 10 by 10 block grid and then just make the most complex thing they can, or make the most livable small space they can, which I think is kind of cool. They're not like micro islands, I forget what they call them, but they're these little micro environments that you can create for yourself.
I've seen a few YouTube videos, so I just kind of like go on looking for inspiration about what to do next. And they create all of these like these small spaces, like a bunch of like different gardens and like libraries and stuff. It's like these outdoor spaces, and try to like craft these really intricate islands. For me, like, and I've started getting into a little bit of that. I don't do too much terraforming because I like the more naturalistic look of the island. But I like the idea of using your sort of like everyday items that you can buy, like walls and stuff, in unusual ways to kind of like create like a look of something. Like I made a little smoothie bar, and I made a little scooter rental kiosk, and I made like a little bookstore and a flower shop, and like an outdoor like public pool. So that's the kind of thing I'm tinkering with the most, and of course that goes into like going to the shop every day and seeing like the most expensive things that that they can buy. Next up, I'm trying to like stash away like some arcade machines and some pinball machines to make a little outdoor arcade, like boardwalk type place. I like the sort of like beach town vibe that you get from just playing the game in general. And a lot of like the videos I see, like people are like creating like castles and stuff, which, you know, is cool, and it's probably very time consuming. Like they come up with some really attractive looking stuff, but just like being able to function within the game looks like it becomes impossible at that point. Like, what if they want to go dig up fossils, or what if they want to craft something and need to like hack at some trees for a little bit? Like it looks like their own decoration like is encumbering them from actually playing the game. So I don't know what all they do in the game to that point, except for like have people visit their island and show it off.
Yeah, and I think of the absurd amount of time that must go in and resources that must go into crafting something like that. You know, like I saw someone that made theirs look like a boat. Like the entire island is a boat, you know, and it's like all of the houses are these 10 different rooms on it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's a bit much, you know. It's like, It's cool. Don't get me wrong. It's really, really cool that you can do that. It's sort of showing the how thin the wall is between a game like this and a game like Minecraft, I guess. But, not for me. Not the way I enjoy playing the game.
Yeah. So, you guys got any other games or topics you feel strongly about tackling? Wes, you got something?
I mean, I'm only playing WoW and a little bit of 7 here and there, so, I mean, I don't have much going on when it comes to games. But...
start playing games from the early 2000s. Well, I guess 7 came out, when was that, like the 90s? Like
97, 98?
I mean, I'm mostly talking about the remake, but I am, like, dipping into the original here and there, just for a little bit, just messing around. Because that game was great.
Any new stuff on Hearthstone?
Hearthstone is... painful, but yeah, I'm playing a lot of Hearthstone as well here and there, just trying to get ranked up since the ranking system changed. So now if I don't put in the work and try to end the season at a high enough rank, then next month this is gonna be a giant pain in the butt to rank up. So it's kind of like I gotta keep at it, which is irritating, because now,
or you can play a different game
or you can just play a different game, but Hearthstone is addicting, and I've put enough work into it now.
You can get Warcraft 3 Reforged.
Yeah, I'm not touching that. No. But, you know, just bit by bit. I did a couple. They now I reached the point in the remake that there's now side quests. So I did a few of those the other day, which was just in this small town area. Nothing crazy. It's progressing. It's interesting. But
okay.
Are there chocobos?
Not yet. There better be some chocobos.
Is that guy Sid around? Is he there?
Sid? No, not yet. Sid was pretty late in the game. He was like late this one.
Hmm. Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, he showed up, I think, after Aeris died. He may have even been this too.
No, it was before.
It was before?
Before.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is Lulu on your team yet? I'm just trying to think of everything I know that crosses over. Sadly, Lulu is not one of them.
So I got a new game. I got a new release that we can talk about for a second here.
Oh, boy.
What you got?
Streets of Rage 4, you guys.
Oh, nice. You got it?
Oh, yeah. And Ryan, this game is legit. Like,
is it good?
When you're ready for your next beat 'em up, this is the one, because it's cool the way that they sort of like balance between it, like having it feel exactly like it showed, like exactly like its predecessors, like on the Genesis, but then doing things to modernize. And you know, it's funny that as you progress in the game, you unlock like all the different modern characters, but then you unlock retro characters as well, and you actually play as like their pixelated models. In the new game, and they fit in perfectly. Like they change so little about the gameplay that these older characters just slide right in. But yeah, and you know that could be to the game's detriment. But they do small things to modernize it, to keep it feeling fresh rather than just like a rehash of the older games. One of the things they do is, you know, you have like your jab, your punch. Is the one button. You have your jump, and then you have like a special move, and these are moves that will also deplete your own HP, your health meter, but it won't like permanently decrease it. It's kind of like a fighting game when you have like a tag team. When you tag out, one character can like replenish health, and you can replenish your health in this beat 'em up by just doing like dishing out damage without taking any damage in return. And if you're able to dish out enough damage, you can recover that health back that you've lost from using your super move. And there are
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and there are of course some small like combo type things. Like everyone's got like their forward punch move, and that will do like a more powerful attack. One character does an uppercut, another one does like a fireball forward. There's also like a forward special, which also does a super move. And there aren't many button combination moves aside from that. You have like your jump attacks and your jump specials. You also have like your ultimate moves, which, you know, you have to have like these little star currency things that you pick up throughout the levels that will, you know, let you pull off these big finishing maneuvers.
Nice.
But yeah, you get four characters to start, and then your fifth character joins really quickly of all your modern stuff. Usually, it'll probably take like one run through the game before you start unlocking all the retro character models. But it's funny the way it worked out, because like the guy who's there are two characters who've been in every game. It's Axel and Blaze, are the two white people that have been in every game. And Axel was always kind of like the balance character who, you know, kind of balanced like power and speed pretty evenly. And in this game, like they've taken him to more of like a bulky lumbering character. He's not the bulkiest or the slowest character, but he's close. And it felt weird playing through as him, because it's like I always typically gravitate toward the balance characters, but it's not him in that game. It's actually Adam from Streets of Rage 1. And
okay.
He kind of feels like the perfect balance between speed and power, and he also has better reach. I like his specials better. They I don't know if they hit as hard, but they definitely hit further. And like a couple of the characters have like a couple of maneuverability advantages. Like Adam can also like do a quick little sidestep to dodge out of the way. He's the only character who can do that. And then there's another character, Cherry, who's this girl who walks around with a big guitar strapped to her back that she also uses for special maneuvers. And she can actually dash, and no other characters can dash. And she's the quickest character and also is going to dish out the least amount of damage. But being so nimble really gives her a huge advantage. So those are the two characters I like the most so far. But yeah, it's 12 stages. None of the stages are particularly long. You can blast through the game in a couple hours, start to finish. You know, if unless your hands get tired from mashing the buttons over and over again.
How is the soundtrack?
I am glad you asked.
I just pulled up the article again, and really kind of beat us over. Not the description on Nintendo.com, but how is the soundtrack?
No. I don't think enough attention has been paid to the soundtrack. No one's bringing it up. So I think we need to bring it up here.
Oh, I'm bringing it up. Let's.
it's fine. It's perfectly acceptable.
So there's music in it, you're saying?
There's some light music. It's kind of like Breath of the Wild. It's kind of like ambient tones.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they brought What's-His-Face in to do the soundtrack.
Everybody. Everybody does a song.
Olivier de Viverry. Wow, this guy's got like the weirdest name. It's like Olivier de Viverry.
It's got to be a French name. It's got to be a weird name. French name.
He's like French-Canadian.
Ugh.
Yeah.
And of course, like Danny Elfman does all the best songs. So.
I feel like French Canadian's not as bad as full French because you know it's a little diluted. It's not
Hemisphere the whole way. Yeah,
yeah, it's not full French.
Yeah,
it's French Canadian.
It's got that Canadian buffer.
It's like the annoyance of French, but yet they're polite about it. Hmm. God, I'm a terrible person.
Yeah, we know.
Yes, you are. We're well aware.
So yeah, like Streets of Rage 4, I played through as four of the five characters. I started to play through as the fifth character, whose name is escaping me, but he's the biggest, most...
Frank. George.
Yeah, we'll call him Frank. That's fine. He's the biggest grappler in the game. He's got a couple of grabs that will grab two opponents and smash them together, which is kind of fun. Oh, but so some other things I should mention... It saves between stages for you, so you can pick up from anywhere. And if you game over, you just start over from the beginning of the stage that you left off at. And also, your lives reset at the end of every level. So you know, in some cases, like sometimes you'll end a stage with like plus one life and it gets set back down, or you know, you just barely finish a stage, so it brings you back up at the beginning of the next one, which is nice. But you know, if you end a stage with like extra lives. Then, as opposed to when you started, it will give you bonus points. So it's easier to unlock more stuff if you're doing that. So there is a payoff for that sort of thing. But yeah, there is online play. I have not tried it yet, but just going through solo, like I played a couple of rounds co-op with Mika, and she did all right. But yeah, this game it's real good. It's highly recommended.
Nice.
All right, anyone got something? Tag in.
I actually watched a movie.
Go.
Ooh.
I watched the latest Star Wars on the 4th because it came out on Disney Plus. So I'm like, all I got to watch this is Star Wars Day.
What'd you think of it?
It wasn't bad. It was okay.
John went from being like, I don't care about it, to kind of, I think, actively hating it.
Oh, you don't like it?
No, I'm still Star Wars agnostic. It's just like it's so pervasive. It's everywhere, and it's,
oh, it really is. This one's way off the charts in comparison to the others.
No. I just mean like in pop culture in general, Star Wars has just permeated everything. And like I have people like actively like if they notice that like I enjoy video games or something, they'll like try to have a Star Wars conversation. I'm like, oh, I'm not really into Star Wars. Like, wait, what? You don't like Star Wars? Like, it's fine.
Is there a nerd version of racist? Because that's like nerd racist. He plays video games.
I get
he
that
must
a lot.
Like Star Wars.
I get that a lot with Game of Thrones. People think for some reason I'm supposed to like Game of Thrones, and I think it's hot garbage.
Yeah, it got worse and worse as it progressed.
Oh, I did finally watch a show. Well, no, actually, we're talking about this, so go ahead.
I mean, I'm not big on movie breakdowns like you guys. I thought it was all right. I mean, have you both seen
it?
How was
the cinematography? What did you think of the editing?
You both seen it? I know Ryan's seen it, but John, did you see it?
Nope.
I really enjoyed it, honestly. I'm not gonna lie. I'm one of those few people I think is generally positive about it. I don't think it's the greatest thing ever, but it's genuinely enjoyable.
I mean,
you know, popcorn stuff.
Definitely better than the second one.
Yeah, I wouldn't say any of them were all that bad.
Yep.
I think the prequels are objectively bad. I think they are bad, and they're stilted, and it's obvious that an entire thing was shot in front of a fucking green screen. So I think those are not good. Literally everything else, I think, is that still a 3 out of 5? I mean, nothing's bad. Everything's at least okay in my book. There's certainly better ones than others. Yeah, and of course, it sucks being in the shadow of the original trilogy, which is, you know, one of the best, you know, science fiction fantasy things ever made. But yeah, the new ones are fine in my mind. I think they're all right.
Yeah.
And it's nice having some closure. It's nice having this whole arc completed. I'm just interested to see where it goes.
Yeah, that's really all we need to say about that. And we watched it. It was fine.
Yeah.
Ryan, you got a show?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The other one, I was saying, like, things that people assume I really like for whatever reason. Another one is Rick and Morty. And I actually finally watched the entire series of Rick and Morty. There's really not that much of it.
No.
And I had seen a few episodes here and there, and I was like, oh, okay, it's zany and gory and whatever. So I didn't realize that there was this whole giant arc to it. There's a lot of really, at the same time, it's very high-minded stuff, but I think it's kind of around maybe season 3 that they kind of get into that thing that South Park did, where it's like they absolutely feel obligated to include some ultra-violence, to brutalize someone or something. I don't know, it's fine, but at the same time, it's sort of like, you know, I don't think, maybe there's people that are like, that really like bloodlust over it, where like, oh yeah, yeah, Rick's gonna fuck some people up or whatever, but it's like, eh, whatever. That's fine. I think they do a lot of complex plots and a lot of really interesting things. I believe it is the same voice actor that does both Rick and Morty, and then a number of other characters. So it's really fantastic listening to him just riff. You get this great vibe. Oh, sorry, what's up?
My friend Mitch, he was telling me, he pointed one thing out that I did not notice, and it almost ruined the show for me. Have you guys ever watched Adventure Time?
No.
A little bit, yeah.
There's a character on there, Lemonhead, who is the most annoying character in the world. Like, just watch a YouTube video of this stupid character. And it's the same guy who did Morty, and the way he's doing the Morty voice is very similar to his. I didn't even catch it. And from there on out, all I'm hearing is like, aah! I'm like, oh my god, just... It almost ruined the show for me.
Yeah.
I like it.
Oh, what's up?
Yeah, I like it too. It's a good time. Like, I don't think it, like, requires, like, any sort of, like, big investment. You can just, like, watch it in small chunks. But, yeah, they usually have, like, a few good jokes. It does get very violent at times. So, there's
for
that.
No reason. Just, like, here's some violence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. And I think the other thing is that it moves so quickly. It's actually kind of difficult sometimes to, like, you can't really look away from it for a minute or two and then come back to it and still have any idea of what's going on, honestly. Mm-hmm. I feel like... it's constantly changing course, which is a good thing. I mean, it's good that it's trying to do interesting narrative things and all that. I'm certainly recommending it. I think it's a cool show and people should watch it. But
and you mentioned you had a comparison to South Park. I think that it also does a lot of things that kind of like the early, not season 1 and 2, but like season 3 and beyond, up to like 7 and 8 of South Park, where they weren't afraid to just fuck things up, like take their characters in whatever direction they were just kind of going in and fill it and just follow it to whatever logical end it comes to, and then find a way to bring it all back around. So it's not like they feel like they have to like reset things at the end of every episode. They'll let things play out over the course of several episodes and see what their characters kind of how their arcs play out as individuals.
Yeah. And also they kind of give themselves an easy out with every episode where, you know, the deus ex machina, I guess, is just that everything can always be destroyed all the time and it doesn't matter because there's always an infinite universe, right? Or an infinite parallel timelines that exist. So I think that we're supposed to believe that we're following the original Rick and that maybe this is the original Morty that he's got some kind of attachment to. But it could just as easily be that he's attached to this specific Morty, and he had gone through 3 or 4 Mortys before this one. It's not like it's the original.
Well, they do address that. They do address that early on in the show, like where they have to they destroy one universe through, and so they have to hop to another one, and like what were their counterparts were dead and just take their place. Like, we can only do this like two or three more times.
Oh yeah, yeah. So right there you go. So there is kind of the temporary nature of the characters, and hey, it opens them up to tell some really interesting stories and kind of dabble in a lot of really high-minded science fiction stuff while delivering. Mm. Lowbrow, guttural violence and fart jokes and, you know, like full frontal nudity and all that stuff that they like to do so much. So,
yeah.
It's a good show. I totally recommend it.
There's actually a show that you talked about a couple of weeks ago that it reminds me of Rick and Morty. I watched a couple episodes of Midnight Gospel, and it's another one.
Oh, very nice. Yeah.
They're having like these high-minded conversations about like God and religion and drugs and all these different things. Like, I guess the premise is there's this sort of like extra-dimensional space being who has this alternate universe machine, and he goes and he just like interviews someone who lives in this alternate universe for his space podcast.
Ryan told us about the show.
Bingo.
Yeah.
It's actually, you brought up Adventure Time. I believe it's the creators of Adventure Time made this.
Oh, one big loop. But, guys, we did it. We did it. We brought it all back.
Yes. But it's nothing like Adventure Time. I mean, Adventure Time's like kind of soft, palatable, brief little chunks of narrative stuff with characters. I mean, I don't know about you. I got the sense that essentially what he did is he found interesting people and then sat them down with a microphone and then just interviewed them for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just talked about whatever their expertise was. Again, one practiced what he calls quote-unquote ceremonial magic, which is essentially mm-hmm. black magic or dark magic, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, one of them is someone that's basically... Sounds like they were a drug trafficker and a drug dealer, because they're talking a lot about using drugs and doing them and to achieve altered states. It sounds like what they did is basically just interviewed them for long chunks of time and then kind of craft these visuals around what their conversation was. You know,
And sometimes it doesn't have anything to do with their conversation. Sometimes they're just kind of like making these like visuals with like sort of adjacent themes, but it also uses it as a way to like just show like really gross or grotesque or violent things.
Right, and then they do bookend it with our guy kind of coming into and out of these worlds for the sake mm-hmm. of doing this podcast essentially. And you see him he does capture little bits of things to kind of showcase all of the different, you know, voyages that he's been on. But yeah, I think that's a really, really high-minded show. I mean, I think it is animated, but I don't really think that there's an audience under the age of, you know, 15 that would really grasp anything from it.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they'd kind of enjoy it. I don't want to marginalize the intelligence of young teenagers, but... A lot of that stuff they're talking about, I think, is a bit much. I think it's a bit much for adults, for most adults, probably really smart enough to really gather a lot of what they're talking about. But you know, it's if it clicks with you, then that's fine. Like, I mean, and I have a thread with a bunch of friends, and that's literally what half of them said, where they were like, "I can't get fucked up enough to really appreciate this." You know, I can't get high enough or whatever. So I guess that's kind of the thing about it. It's. I don't know. It's cool, though. It's worth checking out an episode. If it clicks with you, then great. If not, then, you know, move on to something else that you'll probably find entertaining. Whatever.
And something that we both saw, Ryan, I finally got around to watching it. I watched Parasite.
Oh, what'd you think?
I liked it. I had to do it in two different sittings because there is that one part that just gets so fucking tense. I was like, nah, I need a break from this.
Yeah.
What is that movie about?
I don't think... So, John, why don't you give a little synopsis?
It is this sort of family of grifters, and they're Korean. They live in Seoul, and one of them they kind of like struggle to make money. They kind of like have a couple of different hustles that they use to make money. And the sort of inciting incident is the son in the family. The family is a mom, dad, sister, and a brother. The son in the family kind of happens into this job as an English tutor for a daughter of a rich family, and through like these sort of like conniving and underhanded tactics, they sort of install the rest of the family members as different like the sister becomes an art tutor for the son of the rich family. The mom becomes the housekeeper through some underhanded tactics to get the old housekeeper fired. They do the same thing for the dad to have him be the chauffeur. So they're all on the payroll of this rich family, and through these very devious means of, and of course, not telling the rich family that they're all related either. They're just kind of like, oh no, your housekeeper, you know, did this and that. Well, I might know someone who might be interested, who's kind of reliable, and kind of like slyly hint that, like, hey, maybe this person. And no, we're definitely not married.
Yep.
And
that's sort of that's the setup. That's probably, you're maybe what, a third of the way into the movie.
Yeah.
By the time everybody's in the house now. Everybody's kind of got a function within this rich family. Mm-hmm. And then that's when things get weird. That's when things... I'm guessing that's kind of probably the part where you were like, okay, I gotta take a second here.
Yep. Yep. Because they're all sort of like they seem to be set up. Like, they have it made, and they're just kind of coasting at that point. And then, without getting into spoilers, because I think this movie is worth a watch, like, there's an incident where things are about to unravel, and they're trying to hold everything together as best they can.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things that you mentioned when we talked about it the first time is that this did, what was it, win Best Picture at the American Academy Awards?
Yeah, it did in fact win Best Picture.
And yeah, I mean, Knives Out was a better movie.
Yeah, it seems like a little underwhelming a film to get the Best Picture win. Yeah, and again, I also brought that up.
It was good.
What's your take?
It was good. It was better than most things that I saw in 2019.
You guys are really like pro Knives Out.
Cuz it's good. Cuz it's so good.
I need to see this. It just showed up in the store one day. I go, "What is this?" and moved on with my life.
it's a great whodunit. It's a really fun whodunit caper, a murder mystery with really sharp, snappy dialogue. This guy Ryan Johnson made it, and he is known for making very sharp, snappy films. So if you like his style, it'll be fucking amazing. It'll be a filet mignon of a film. Great stuff. Oh, and well, so to back to Parasite though, like, that was the interesting thing I thought about Parasite, was like, not a single actor got nominated for an award, which is the first time apparently that's ever happened, where a Best Picture winner did not have a single actor for best or supporting in any of the categories. So did any characters, like, I know I had a personal favorite of the cast that I thought, you know, if you were going to give somebody at least a nomination, I had somebody in mind.
I don't know. I think my favorite character was probably, I don't know, I guess the sister. And it's mostly because, like, she was the one who I least wanted to get their comeuppance. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if, like,
she was actually my favorite character too, honestly. I thought that she was really fascinating and had a very kind of wry humor about her, and she was very sly and very but not truly just mischievous, just like, but not evil or anything.
Right. She was kind of like the brains of at least the brother and the sister combination. They were the two kind of get the rest of the family, like the mom and the dad in there working for the rich family as well. But like the brother, I don't know. He was a good enough character, but it was weird because it must be like a cultural thing. Perhaps, I don't know. I don't know too much about Korean culture, but it was like the brother was taking a job from a friend of his who was tutoring the young girl, and then both of them end up with a crush on this 15-year-old girl, and they're both like supposed to be like 18, 19, something like that. I'm like, oh, guys. That's not something.
Hey, a story like that happens in Georgia every day, man. Don't judge them.
Yeah, it is not okay there either.
Hey, they think the age of consent in Georgia is 16, so that's fine.
Seriously? Man,
just because it's a law. Just because. No, Wes, don't get excited.
Wes is like, jingling the car keys.
Okay, give me the car keys.
Just because it's the law doesn't mean it's fine.
I don't think that's. Oh my gosh, it is. That is hilarious.
I remember helping. Didn't we do this? Didn't we help an ex of mine when we were in college?
Yeah.
Do a PSA on taking your prom date across the border to Georgia.
Yep.
So you could have sex with them. I'm pretty sure that we did this. A great topic for a PSA.
I can't remember where she landed on the issue. Were we pro low age of consent when we were doing this thing, or we? I don't know. I don't remember clearly if it was it's okay to do this in these states, or if it's hey, it's technically okay to do it in these states, but don't.
Oh no, I think that was the point. I think we were sort of saying, no, do not have sex with underage girls. It's illegal.
Okay, good.
But there's Georgia. Just go to
Georgia. No.
Oh, that's messed up. That's so messed up.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I don't know. I think she got an A though. She got a great grade for it. The teacher said it was fucking hilarious.
Okay, great.
That's what matters.
Well, I'm glad for that. I hope that never resurfaces. And now that I've said that, I'm going to try to contact her to see if I can get it to resurface.
I really want
to
see this. I really want to see this.
Please.
No, it was an audio thing. There was no video.
Okay, I really want to hear this.
Well, because it was an audio tech thing,
right?
Oh, yeah,
because
you
guys, the whole video wasn't a thing, was it?
Wait, what's that?
So what were we saying? Parasite.
No, that's really all I had to say about it. I think I told you, honestly, I didn't think it was the best film of the year. I told you at least two films are better. Once Upon a Time in L.A. was a better film in my mind, and certainly Knives Out was a better film. I didn't see other ones.
I like Jojo Rabbit better.
Yeah, you said that was very good. I still haven't seen that one, and pretty much everybody agrees that was a great film, so...
Wes, you got anything else? Tag in.
I got nothing, guys. I've been sitting around.
I have one last topic if you want to.
I actually had a call out of work yesterday. Well, I didn't call out. I asked them if they wanted me to go in because it was very iffy. My dad had to go in to get tested. And it came back negative. He's fine. But work was stay home. in between the results.
Sure.
Yeah. So.
Oh, that's good. I was glad he's okay.
He's fine. But I've been, staying around the house again, just getting ready to quarantine if it came back positive.
Yeah, boy.
So I got a couple more games. I'm not going to spend any significant amount of time on any of them. I played the Resident Evil 4 again because I have the time, and that was a lot of fun. By the end of I was just playing through. I did a cleared file, but I just kind of reset everything. Was playing through normally. By the time I got to chapter 5, I was okay, I'm ready for this to be done. Buy my Chicago typewriter and let's just blast through it. So, that was a lot of fun.
That infinite rocket launcher.
I would have gone infinite rocket launcher, but I would have had to clear out more space for it. I would have had to sell other weapons, which I probably could have sold off every weapon once I bought the Chicago typewriter, but I didn't want to go through the process of talking to the merchant over and over again. Because the way they have it set up in that game, it's kind of it's a little wonky when you look back at it to how you're buying and selling things, because it automatically defaults to no, I don't want to complete this transaction, even though you've already set up the transaction. And then you have to redo the whole thing over and over again to what you want to sell to them. So, I don't know. Probably... If I ever do another run through, maybe I'll just try to do an infinite rocket launcher only, which would be kind of funny.
I have done that. It is a wacky run. Because, I think I died more in that run than I have in other runs, just because this point blank here is a zombie in your face. You're like, oh, God.
Sure. Sure, there's a lot of close quarter fights, and what are you supposed to do?
It's a very wacky run.
And then the other game that I'm playing through, I'm in the final boss. I was actually just trying to beat the final boss for a half hour before we started recording. Mega Man 04, and that would be... I'm playing through that on Switch on the Mega Man 0 and ZX Collection. So that's the last of the Zero games, and I'll be done with it. I was playing through that one, and it works a little bit differently from the other Zero games. The sort of economy to how you're upgrading your character is a bit friendlier, but they still never solve the problem of sort of scarcity of currency. You have to do a lot of replaying levels and grinding in order to upgrade your character enough to where you feel like you're really ready for the final boss. I did not do that this time around, and I'm trying real hard not to have to go back to a previous save so I can grind out to get more health and upgrade the weapons, because I really don't want to do it. I just kind of want to be done with it. The final boss in that game is two phases. I've gotten a pretty good handle on the first phase, but the second phase is still giving me a hard time because it deals a lot of damage and it's timed. So I can't play it just cautiously avoiding damage and taking the openings. You have to be aggressive with it, or because you only have 2 minutes in order to get through the entire thing. So I don't know, maybe tomorrow I'll turn it back on again and see if I can get through to the end. But these Zero games have been fun little strolls through the GBA library, but they definitely have showed their age in the way that they've designed levels and bosses. It's definitely meant to surprise you and trap you and make you go back, because otherwise if you're just playing the game straight through from start to finish, it only takes like an hour and a half to get through the whole thing if you know you have like the appropriate upgrades and stuff. So these games are sort of made to be played through, and then you can like reset the game and do a new game plus carrying over all your upgrades, and then do it again, get a few more upgrades until you're able to get like your perfect run after you play through it several times, which, you know, on the GBA at the time might have seemed like a good idea. Playing through it now, or just kind of want to play through these games once and experience it, it's not the best. And then the last game that I played, I just played through it the other day. It only took a couple days. It was a short game. I played through Limbo.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
Yeah, which is, I think, from the same developers as Inside. It was their previous game.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, playing through Limbo makes me appreciate a lot of the things they did in Inside to improve on the formula, because they're both like these sort of like puzzle platformers with a little bit of stealth to them. And Inside does a much better job with, even though it has very limited mechanics, taking the like kind of basic mechanics of Limbo and finding more things to do with them. Limbo, a lot of the impetus of the puzzles is like, hey, here's a situation. You got to go backwards. You got to go back to where you already were in order to figure out what you need to do forward here. And like the first example is like when you encounter the spider the first time, you can see like there's this bear trap. And that's one of the other things about this game, that there's a lot of traps, just a lot of instant deaths that, you know, will set you back not that far, a couple of seconds, but some of them feel like really mean the way that they're placing these traps. You're just trying to like progress a little bit and you get hit with like all of these surprise deaths. Some of them are smartly placed because it does force you to go backwards and look for solutions that you might not think to go backwards for. So there is some thoughtfulness to where they're putting the traps, but there are just as many that just feel like they want to stop you and have you reset. Kind of like just for the same reason that you just place a ton of invisible blocks in Mario Maker. But the spider, you encounter, it's behind a tree, it'll like reach out and grab you. You need to bait it into grabbing you and have it like miss and slam the ground. And after doing that twice, it will knock a bear trap loose on a tree that's now off screen. So you have to like go back and inspect it in order to be able to drag it forward and use the bear trap on the spider. So there's quite a few puzzles like that where you bypass something that maybe you weren't able to access before, and something you're able to do a little bit later changes it, so you have to go backwards. And it's not something you see in these puzzle platformers a whole lot. But, you know, overall, I enjoyed the game just fine. I think that, you know, if you have a choice like between like playing this and playing Inside, I'd say go ahead and just skip over to Inside, because it's a more refined puzzle platforming experience. But, you know, if you played Inside, you really liked it, and you're looking for more like that, then Limbo's fine. It's okay.
Nice. Yeah, that's good.
Long pause.
Sorry, I wasn't sure if Wes was going to chime in. I love the game Inside a lot. I haven't played Limbo. But yeah, at the same time, I haven't really felt compelled to go back and play it either. Again, like I think, like you're saying, Limbo does feel a little more simplistic, I guess you could say. Mm. Or I mean, well, it does have that nice monochromatic black and white tone. Yeah. But, you know, Inside feels like you're playing a narrative. It feels like it's a movie. You're kind of in with your characters. You're going through it and solving all these fun puzzles. And, yeah, a lot of, I think, the draw of Limbo is, frankly, watching the kid get brutalized. you know, it seems like they came up with a lot of fun ways to mangle this little boy.
And the thing with Inside is it does give you, like, a lot more interesting things to, like, look at and interact with. There is a lot more variety to the places that you're going. So yeah, you guys got anything else that you want?
I have one last thing to talk about, and it was something that we were speculating on, and it's the proposed shortened MLB season.
Oh yeah,
and what that could end up looking like if it were to exist. Did you read up on that, or have you heard anything?
Just what you had sent.
Oh yeah, and again, so this was really just essentially, I guess when you're talking about the MLB, you're basically talking about the owners. You're probably talking about the owners of the teams. So their proposed idea was essentially shortened season. You play 82 games. I think it was 82. I know that's how many games are in a regular season of basketball. I feel like that was the number they were throwing around. But it drastically shortens the season. You know, they were saying you play colloquially, like you play in little regions. So, you know, if you're in... And it might not be exactly that. Like, if you're in the AL East, you only play the AL and NL East teams. But it could be even more regional than that. It could just be, like, you're literally just playing the teams in the Northeast. Mm-hmm. They might find ways to kind of chunk them off. So there's limited travel, limited exposure, and all that stuff. They were saying expanded rosters. Both teams get the DH. Seems like it's just an excuse to fast-track to a playoff season, to playoffs, which is fucking fine. Like... I don't know. I was actually just going to pick your brain on it. I was interested to see what you would think of it.
I think it's an interesting idea. I don't know how they pull it off. They're going to have to, if they want to get 82 games, and I guess like June, July, August, if they did end up starting in June, yeah, they got enough time to do 82 games without having to cram in too many double headers. I think the regional thing is an interesting idea. I think once you get out to the West Coast, then, you know, Denver is still quite far from Phoenix. And the grand scheme. So,
a lot of those teams have a lot of distance to cover living out there.
Yeah, whereas in the Northeast, you have a bunch of teams that are clustered together. You got, you know, your New York teams, your Boston, Toronto, Baltimore, your Pennsylvania teams. I think it's something that they could definitely pull off. You know, that sort of thing kind of works out into the Red Sox favor because. You know, Pittsburgh and the Phillies aren't great. The Mets are not great. They don't really have too many really powerhouse teams to contend with in that region, which works out because they're also not a powerhouse team. So,
yeah, you know, as they're constructed right now, you know, yeah. But, I mean, it's kind of like I was thinking about it with the Warriors where it's like they picked a really good year just to just not care about basketball or to not even try to field a decent team because they're ending up with the worst team in the NBA and they don't have to see somebody else collect a ring, you know?
Right. So they cancel just outright cancel the NBA season at this point?
Last I heard is that there was a meeting and they were optimistic about finishing the year. Like, or finishing the season. I don't really know what that means, though. I think around this time that they would have already... We would be, I think, in the finals right now if we hadn't already passed it. I think this is actually kind of around the time that the NBA season's winding down. I think it's usually after March Madness, right? Like, we missed the entire March Madness, this NCAA basketball tournament this year.
Right.
So if they're going to do it, they need to figure it out quick because they don't have a lot of time. I think that's what baseball was saying, is that they were going to start doing organized team activities in June. They were at least going to attempt to. Oh, and by the way, I should also stipulate, from what it sounds like, the Players Association wants, like, nothing to do with this plan as pitched by the owners. Meaning, like, the owners are doing all of this owner-friendly shit, and they're like, no, we're not doing that. But, I mean, it just means that there is grounds for communication on that where, you know, the Players Association is now going to come back. Because what the owners are going to claim is, right, like, since there's nobody in the stands, I think the stat I heard was, like, 40% of their revenue is supposed to come from the physical game itself being played and people going to it, not just TV mm-hmm. deals and stuff like that. And, you know, there's a whole workforce that's employed by these teams of people, you know, slinging peanuts and pouring you beers and shit. So, I'm sure that both sides are going to try to make as much money as they can. But in the face of it, and with as much as people want any kind of distraction, I think they will be very eager to put a product out on television that will just, you know, gobble up viewers.
And I'm sure that they're eager to get something out as quickly as possible, because they would be the only sport, like the only American sport being televised at this point. So they'd have everything to themselves.
ESPN was broadcasting. I was going to say ESPN was just broadcasting the other night South Korean baseball.
Yeah,
because it was a live sport being played. You know.
Yeah, and there's a desire to see live sports on TV again. So. You know, they'd have the spotlight all of themselves, which would be good. And it's kind of a tough time for there to be such a gulf between, like, Major League Baseball as an organization and the Players Association as a union. They are not agreeing on a lot of things, and there's a lot of speculation as to, like, not if there's going to be another strike, but when there's going to be another strike. And it would be, I think it would be very bad for baseball as a sport if, you know, they miss the entire 2020 season, and then in 2021 you have a player strike and miss part of that season as well. I don't think they can afford to be off TV, out of the consciousness for that long, you know?
Oh, and if anything, I think that just hurts the players' bargaining perspective.
Mm.
You know? Yeah, and I think that's what came up. I think that, there was an interview, I forget who it was talking, but they were talking about baseball. And they were saying that, you know, there was actually going to be a strike that occurred. It was a planned occurrence, I guess, for the 2001-2002 season. That it just looked like both sides were just button heads, they would never come to an agreement, they were just going to have a strike, and it would be sorted out at the end of it. And then September 11th, of course, occurred.
Mm.
And they just felt like it would be in very poor taste for the have the, you know, the old trope, the billionaires arguing with the millionaires over how much money they get.
Sure, so. Sure.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know if we ever got a resolution to this when we last talked about baseball, but they did decide that service time was going to be counted for the players for the 2020 season, which has a few implications, including the contract of Mookie Betts. He is going to be a free agent at the end of the what would be the 2020 season, so I'm sure that the Dodgers management is eager to play some sort of games so they get some sort of value out of Mookie Betts before he becomes a free agent and they have to, like, spend even more money on him. So
that's a good point. This actually kind of works out in Boston's favor too. Was this about getting under a payroll cap? There is no payroll cap in baseball.
There's no cap, but there's a luxury tax.
Right. Okay.
Yes. It was about them getting underneath the luxury tax threshold, which I think this year is going to, like, even if they don't play, I think it will still count as them being underneath the tax threshold for a year, so they will be free to spend some more money without too many penalties. So there is a possibility that Mookie Betts never plays in another uniform except for the Red Sox, and the Red Sox got, you know, some prospects out of it.
Jeez, wouldn't that be hilarious?
Wouldn't it be so, like, they need to re-sign Mookie Betts. Like, he's a once in a generation player. It would be a travesty if he
what
if
a
he
fuck you, Moo.
Yeah, like they should have done this already. Like they should have done this like a couple of years ago. They just should have slid a blank check across the desk and say, here you go, you fill this in.
Yeah,
and just made it work, make it happen.
Well, I think I told you about what happened with Darrell Revis. I think when that came up one time, we were talking about him. He was a corner for the Jets, and, you know, he basically left the Jets, I only think, for literally a one-year deal with the Pats, and then that year the Patriots won the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. So, and then he went back to the Jets. So, it was just like, what a weird loaner. Like, we'll let him do it for a year. Oh, you guys win the fucking title, and he comes back sporting a ring. So,
yeah.
Jeez.
There is one other Red Sox topic that we can tackle, as long as we're on the subject. They have been issued their punishment from Major League Baseball for the sign-stealing scandal in the 2018 season. And if you remember, the Astros had some pretty hefty punishments come down on them, including fines and suspensions for some of their front office folks, including their manager and general manager. So the Red Sox, there, and the guy's name escapes me. I'm sorry, but he does advanced scouting for the Red Sox. And what he was doing during the 2018 season is he was looking at replay video from previous games and sort of using that replay information from previous games to sort of coach players, I suppose, in between innings. Down in the locker rooms, not on the dugout, about what a pitcher might end up doing. So he was stealing signs from previous games from video that was readily available, like on television. So not.
I don't really know how that constitutes. I mean, wouldn't again? I don't know if that necessarily constitutes the same kind of thing that
no.
the Astros did, though, by any means.
No. I think.
Wait, you're just telling me that he was watching replay. Was he not supposed to have access to that replay video?
I guess not. I guess
because you could like watch the games yourself. Like, I mean, they always had.
Yeah.
That's like literally the standard camera view is over the pitcher's shoulder, looking at the catcher giving signs.
Yeah, and you know,
I mean, it sounds like every team would do that.
Maybe I've misunderstood what was happening. Maybe he was watching like. The game they were playing on TV and then telling the players, hey, it looks like this sign means this. Even if that were the case, it's not anywhere near as egregious as the Astros like using like technology and possibly buzzers and stuff to like alert each other like what pitch was coming next. Major League Baseball has kind of come down this position like, hey, let's not use any sort of tech in games to try to convey any sort of information. Let's just let them play the games. Which, you know, okay. I can understand that position, understand why they would want to do that. But basically, like, this was a lot of build-up to what amounted to be kind of like a speeding ticket to the four-car pileup that the Astros caused. You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
no specific
trivial infraction.
Yeah, no specific players were mentioned as being involved. Some of the play, like the only guy that's receiving any sort of punishment for this is the one advanced scout, and he's just not allowed to work the replay booth for the I think 2021 season. But he'll still end up doing advanced scouting for the Red Sox.
Oh, that's nothing.
Yeah,
like the Red Sox don't even if that's the punishment that's getting handed down, they don't even their name should not be mentioned in the whole thing.
And they lost the second round 2020 draft pick as well.
Ooh.
Which,
well, I mean, don't they have 30 rounds in the draft?
Right. I think it got abbreviated to 5 rounds this year because of COVID.
Oh, jeez.
But yeah, like this is something, and there are a lot of rumblings before the punishment got handed down. They're like, hey, the Red Sox. It was from like other like front office folks in different on different teams and organizations. Like, yeah, they're gonna get caught for something, but it's not anything that the rest of us aren't doing. So,
yeah.
It kind of like kind of get this slap on the wrist and like a wag of the finger to everyone else. Like, hey, nobody do this. This is bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if any sort of resolution is gonna come with like. If the Astros were possibly using buzzers underneath the jerseys, because
I don't know, I think a lot of stuff is going to get kind of swept under the rug because of the whole COVID thing. I think that's all that's on anyone's mind right now. So people are going to come at it like, who knows? And whenever this whole COVID thing clears up, people are going to be like, oh yeah, remember how the Astros did do that one thing that one time?
Right.
It's just it doesn't feel like it's that crucial that these guys get punished now that, you know, we have this giant thing looming over everything. And that we're literally worried about whether or not there will be more baseball. Not even that one team cheated one time, but just like, when are we actually going to see this game played again that we love so much? So, yeah. But hey, the Astros are due it, man. They're due a fucking spanking for what they did. Like, that's really shitty what they did. That is so fucking cheatery. That is like some cheating bullshit. So, yeah.
Well, they did get their punishment for, you know, of course the actual like sign stealing using a video to like steal signs and have the players sort of relay the like banging on the trash cans and stuff to relay like what like an off speed pitch was coming.
I told you that was my solution to the whole thing. Just don't allow trash cans in the dugouts anymore.
Yeah, no more trash cans. Yeah.
Yep.
That's it.
Easy peasy.
Can't play with these nicely, so you can't have them.
Yep.
But they're still the because there was that one guy. I forget which player it was in the Astros, but he like basically it was an important game. I think it was a playoff game. And he ended up like hitting a game-winning home run or a game-winning hit or something. And as he's rounding the bases, the players are waiting there at home plate to congratulate him. He's screaming at them, "Don't take off my shirt! Don't take off my shirt!" And a lot of people are thinking like, "Yeah, that's because he had something underneath his shirt." Like at the interview, like when he gave like three different answers during like three different interviews as to why he was telling people not to take off his shirt. I was like, "Oh, well, I just got a fresh tattoo." Like, "Oh, my wife would be embarrassed if I was shirtless on TV." Like, uh-huh.
I don't want her to see that Josie Altuve hickey he gave me.
Yeah, that team is sketch as fuck.
Yep. So yeah, another asterisk for the sport of baseball.
Hmm. All right, you guys got anything else? Should we close it out?
No, that's all I got.
Cool. So next up is going to be the retro show. It's going to be a good one.
Wait, we talking?
Yeah. Star Wars Episode One Racer is on tap.
That's what I call pod racing. Yeah, we're gonna have some fun.
For the N64, and then also Super Smash Brothers for the N64.
Oh.
Actually, you know what? From what I heard, they delayed the release of the Pod Racer game for Switch.
They did.
So, is that going to be out before that? Is that going to be out at any point before this podcast?
I don't know if they have a solid release date. I think they delayed it like the day before it came out. So I don't know if they've updated with a...
I think it was supposed to come out on PlayStation 2, and it got delayed for that as well.
I think it is out on PC. I think it did come out there, but... As far as like when it's coming to Switch, I don't think we know at this point.
More importantly, it came out on the N64.
Sure did. So you can play it there.
True. I can go track down a copy.
But yeah, I think it might be a good time. It's been a while since the three of us together were doing a retro show. I think it might be a good time to like do a nice like sort of a historical context to what was going on in 1999 when these games were coming out in the spring of 99.
Well, there was SARS, and then
there's actually electronic artist Charlie XCX, and she has a song that's literally called 1999, and it sounds like kind of that throwback high energy electronic music that was really popular in the 90s. And it's basically her just reminiscing about the 90s. It's got a number of little pop culture things about the 90s. It's a great song too, but yeah, it's fun.
Cool.
Oh, but yeah, I'm interested to see what all the historical context is of the time too. That would be cool.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yep.
And then we'll wrap it all up at the end of the month with the official show. So, till next time, everybody.
So long.
Later. Thank you.
We'll be right back.